Save big on your Memorial Day barbecue, all in the Kroger app. Get 3-pound rolls of juicy 80% lean ground beef for $3.49 a pound with a digital coupon. Then get select varieties of flavorful Powerade, Body Armor Super Drink, or Arizona Tea for 77 cents each, all with your card. Shop these deals at your local Kroger today, or tap the screen now to download the Kroger app to save big today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Prices and product availability subject to change. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
Ooh, a spicy question. I
because
love it.
Because the writing is sort of everything, right? Like, you can fix plot holes, but if the writing is
so some readers love that, and some readers are like, but I wanted more of this. So it's kind of a gamble.
Hello, and welcome back to the Right and Wrong podcast. On today's episode, I am joined by former actor and autocue operator, now full-time writer, Hester Musson. Hello. Thanks so much for joining me.
Hi. Thank you very much for having me on.
Oh, it's my pleasure. So just to clarify, I did introduce you as now full-time writer, and some people might be confused as I'm about to ask you about the debut novel, which is not yet out. So anyone listening, if you're confused by that, stay tuned. We'll get into Hester's other writing work later. But right now, The Beholders, your gothic historical fiction, is out 18th of January. Yes. Tell us a bit about it.
Well, it's set in 1878, and it begins with the trial of a woman who is the wife of an MP, and she's accused of murdering their baby son. But the story then flips back a few months and is told completely through the diaries of a housemaid called Harriet, who goes to work for them at their country estate. And Harriet is, she's not happy. She doesn't want to go home and marry her childhood sweetheart, and that's really the only sensible option open to her. But she doesn't want to be a full-time domestic servant either. She's looking for a higher purpose, and she thinks she's found it in this house. She's blown away by the grandeur of Finton Hall, where even the other servants are all beautiful, and especially in her mistress, Clara, who she seems to see something in Harriet that nobody else ever has. And she's captivating in herself. She has this extraordinary singing voice, and she fills the house with it. So Harriet thinks she's landed on her feet, but then she begins to realize that there are secrets at Finton Hall. Everything isn't quite as it seems, and she begins to doubt her decision. And eventually she has to make another choice about how far she's willing to go, what she's willing to risk to do what she thinks is the right thing. So it's about ideas around service and power, and how power presents itself to be sometimes what it isn't, and especially when it's been abused. And in that way, crimes can become hidden in plain sight.
Amazing. That, I mean, it has all the kind of trimmings of a great kind of thriller mystery drama. And also, I'm aware, not just from the cover, which is wonderful, but the kind of gothic aspect of it all. That was, are you sure this is your debut? That was such a good summary of the whole thing.
It's not my first summary. I'm sort of getting there. Okay. So, yeah, most writers though try and explain your book in a few sentences, and it's not easy.
My experience with writers, and this is me as well, is you can talk about someone else's book at length with ease, and then when someone asks you about your book, you're like, what is my book?
because it's so big in your own mind that you can't. Yeah. It's sometimes difficult to whittle it down to the
That's
bare bones.
True. I'd not thought about it like that. Yeah, it's much larger. Like because there's what you put on the page, and then there's everything else that's kind of ancillary that you left out.
Yeah, exactly. It's like saying describe a country.
yeah, exactly. Yeah.
What?
And it would be easier to describe a country to another person who's native to that country.
Yes, like, yeah,
versus,
exactly. Yeah.
Because they would just get a lot of the things you wouldn't have to explain.
Yes, yeah, exactly. Describe another planet, maybe.
Yeah. So you mentioned that it starts in the trial, and then it moves back, and you get a different point of view. The book actually starts with you have like a fictitious newspaper excerpt from the Evening Standard?
Yes, I can't remember if it says it is.
Well, I was wondering, because obviously the first thing I did when I saw the book, I was like, well, let me see if this actually was a real newspaper thing. Because I'm like that.
I did that with a book recently.
Oh. Were there any like real life events or characters that you drew inspiration from the period or whatever?
There weren't specifically. They're not based on actual people. It was more an amalgam of all sorts of different cases not just in the 19th century, but right up to now, human nature hasn't changed that much. So it was, yeah, there's nothing I can point to and say, oh, it's definitely that. There are some things, it does talk about baby farming quite a bit, and I did a lot of research into that, and some things were taken directly from that, but the characters are completely fictitious.
Oh, okay, that's interesting. Because generally historical, when people do historical stuff, there's a lot of research involved. So I'm guessing you, what was it about the kind of 1800s that drew you in, that made you want to say, oh, I want to write about this era specifically?
Well, it's an era that I've always just been very drawn to. I love its literature, and I find it fascinating historically, because it's like you can never quite pin them down. Sometimes it feels like they're just completely separate, so outdated. And sometimes it's startling what you discover is they had, which you think could have come later, and some of the views and the progressiveness of them. It's startling. It's very hard to kind of find your footing, I think, with the Victorians. But I never actually wanted to write a book set then. That happened because I was writing a story in the present, and I had a historical subplot, and I thought, oh, well, it was just quite a minor one, just dropping in letters or diary entries for a kind of background mystery that's going on that comes to sort of fruition in the present plot. And then because I needed it to work out with the generations for my modern heroine, I sort of got back to the 1870s. So that's really why it started there.
Oh, okay.
But then when I actually started writing that subplot and Harriet's voice came through, it just took over. And I eventually realized that this has just got to be the entire novel. So then I started thinking, so when exactly is it going to be? And now I'm not tied to it anymore. But I think because I'd already done quite a lot of research about the 1870s, I just shifted it to the right year. I found that everything worked very well anyway. So I didn't have to go and research too much.
Oh, wow.
A different time.
So this really started off as something quite different.
Totally different, yeah.
Wow, okay, that's so cool. I wanted to ask about, you know, the kind of dotting of letters and snippets and things like that throughout, whether that was always kind of part of the plan.
Not really, no. I can't remember when I put the first newspaper article in, because when I started writing and thought, oh, okay, this is going to be the whole book, I was a bit, do I really want to write a whole book in diary form? Because that is amazingly challenging,
yeah.
As it turns out. But I ended up just doing that. And I think I had a couple of snippets in. And then actually, because it falls very naturally into three sections, it was my editor who said, oh, let's drop more in at each section, which was great, because then I could go in and explore different types of things. It wasn't just newspapers. So that was nice.
Yeah, when it comes to the... And we've already just established that this was originally something very different, but how much planning did you do ahead of like sitting down and beginning to write the story?
I did quite a lot, because it was originally a subplot. That story came together a bit more quickly, I think, than the main one. So I had the temp poles, as it were. But I find I really love plotting, but there's only a certain point I can get to when I know that I have to stop and start writing, because so much of the plot will come out of character and I have to write to really get to know the character. So there's only so much I can do. And sometimes it all goes to plan. Other times I start writing and it actually veers off completely and I just let myself go with it and then have another plotting, you know, at some point. If I get really stuck, I realize it's because I need to go away and think about the whole story more and plot a bit more.
Right.
But yeah, this book did not behave at any point in any way. It was such a convoluted writing journey. It's set in Finton Hall for a lot of the book, but originally that wasn't going to be the plan at all. There was actually going to be a very different kind of story arc, but I just couldn't get her to leave the house. She wanted to leave. There was too much going on. So that had a big impact on the final story as well.
Well, you're not the first author to, and whether accidentally or on purpose, who I've spoken to who likes to write out a sort of plan and a plot and then just put it to the side. So it exists in the back of their mind, but like there's nothing tying them to it. They're not referring to it to stay like completely on the track.
Yeah, I think that's really nice because then you get the fun of just writing to see what happens. Mm-hmm. The first novel I wrote, I didn't plan at all. I just sort of threw myself at it. I didn't really think I could write a novel, so I just wrote anything. Write, you know, nothing was in order. It was just different that I had an idea about it. I'd start writing, which was really, really fun, but it did take forever. And then eventually you have to go back and say, right, what is this? and sort of make it behave and make it neater. So I think, to plan, which is fun in itself, but then to not be really strictly tied to it is kind of the best of both worlds in a way. You still get that fun of thinking, oh, this has happened, I need to go in this direction instead.
Yeah. Based on what you've just said, I am going to guess that you've written multiple kind of full novel length manuscripts before The Beholders.
Two others.
Okay.
And one of them I keep going back to try and write. So I've written that one about four times.
Oh, wow.
But yeah, there were two that I got to completion. Yeah, the first one is the one that I still stand by and I would really like to crack. and I will keep going back to it. And the second one was a totally different experience. I planned that much more and I did more thinking about things like markets and how you submit to people. And that's the one that did actually get me an agent. But then, this is the book that's got all the way.
Oh, I see. So Beholders is not the book that you signed with Juliet Mushens.
Yes, that's right. It was the one before, which, it's so great. Juliet's such a great agent in that because she's the sort of person who picks a writer and then will stay with you, which is really lovely. And thank goodness.
Yeah.
Because the one before, it did actually sell to an Italian publisher, but then I think the editor left, there was a shake-up and it got shelved. So it never actually got published.
Oh, interesting.
Which I didn't really, apparently it happens a lot. I hadn't realized that. So that was a bit disappointing, but it actually worked out great because this is now my debut. So we can publish it with all the bells and whistles of it being a debut.
Yes. Yeah. We'll get all the extra marketing buzz and things like that.
Yeah, exactly.
Oh, okay. That's really cool. Since we're on Juliet anyway, and Juliet's career is really like blowing up. She seems to be taking over publishing at the moment.
It's extraordinary, isn't it?
Yeah. Was it through open submissions that you connected and signed with Juliet?
Yes, it was. And I very nearly didn't submit to her because she just had The Miniaturist out and that had obviously gone stratospheric. So I thought, she'll be absolutely inundated. And reading her blurb online, I thought, I'm not sure she'll be really interested in my book anyway. So I just thought, oh, perhaps she's not one to submit to. But then I was talking to two women who had their own publishers, little publishing indie house, who they were very interested in the novel, but they said, we'd love to, but we're actually shutting down now, moving on to other things. So yeah, I was like, oh, but they said, but we just met Juliet Mushens, you must submit to her, she was so lovely. And so I thought, oh, well, at least I can say I've met someone she's met now, so you've got that kind of...
Yeah,
you were just desperate for a toehold, just anything to connect you with someone. So I just submitted it. And yeah, thank goodness.
Did you have a lot of agents getting back to you?
I had, I submitted to a lot and a few came back asking for the full manuscript, but not loads. And actually, Juliet was the last one. I was doing it in tranches of 10.
Okay, that's good.
Yeah. I don't know if it's different now. I think then, because even then it would take such a long time for them to get back to you just because of how many they're reading. And I think that's probably even more the case now. So I don't know if I'd do that again, but it worked at the time. But she was the last one of that section of sending them out.
Right.
And had asked for the whole novel. So yeah, that she was, and she actually sent, talk about her work ethic. She sent me, I saw she'd sent me an email at 10 o'clock on a Friday evening. I thought, I can't, if this is another rejection, I can't face it just before I go to bed. So I didn't open it.
Oh, yeah.
Didn't read it till the morning.
Well, that's good. Gave you time to really think about, ponder what it was overnight.
Yeah, just sort of, putting your armor on for, what am I going to do if this one? Get ready for it.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
And once you'd signed with Juliet, presumably she, like most agents nowadays, is she quite editorial?
Yes, she is. She's a brilliant editor in her own right, actually, which is fantastic. I was quite nervous once I did get a deal of getting another editor, because I was like, what if she's not as good as Juliet? But actually really lucked out with Katie Bowden as well. She's fantastic. There was a lot of work that we did before submitting it to publishers.
You mentioned that you signed with the previous novel. Mm. When you started sort of conceptualizing The Beholders, were you kind of bouncing ideas around with Juliet for the whole thing?
At all. And I did ask her at one point if she wanted to read anything halfway through, and she said no, she preferred to just get the whole manuscript.
Okay, so you didn't even sort of pitch stuff with her? As in, like, this is what I'm thinking of writing, and
I don't think I did that.
Okay.
Which is perhaps just as well, as it would have been completely different from what I eventually set up.
Yeah, that's true. Your process was to write a book and then find another book within the first book.
Yes, basically, sort of like Russian dolls.
Yeah, exactly. Is that more a kind of you preference? Is that you would like to be sort of left alone and just to write a thing, and then when the thing is complete, that's when you want to kind of share it and talk about it?
Yeah, I think so. Because it's such a strange and complex process to write a novel.
Yeah,
I want it to be what it is with just me doing it. Without any sort of interference, it wouldn't be interference, but without any other influence in it.
Yeah.
To see what I'm writing, I think you could very quickly get knocked off track. There was a time I tried a few different writers' groups, and I didn't find that useful for novel writing. It was great in terms of talking about writing and improving, sentence by sentence. Was really good, but I didn't find it useful for the novel, because it's the same thing we started talking about. You know, you have this world in your head which other people can't access if they're reading a couple of pages. And it is a real skill, I think, to do that and not sort of run away with your own ideas of what someone should do with a book. So I do like to sort of keep it in-house. I like talking about the ideas. I like talking about the novel as I'm writing it. That can be really helpful, but not actually having someone read it. So, yeah, I suppose I could have talked about it more, but I don't know, I feel...
I understand that. It's very much, I think it's a preference for you as a writer. Like, some people, I think, thrive by having the whole process kind of back and forth with lots of other people and different opinions and stuff. But I understand, it sounds like with you, if someone were to come in and say something, it might kind of subconsciously change one thing, and then the butterfly effect would explode that later on. The whole thing could be completely different to what it would have been.
Yeah, and I think that would be okay, because you're all the time sort of being nudged by other influences. But I think it can make you confused, is what I found. It can sort of make you doubt. And if you've got some frail idea that you want to explore, if that sort of gets shoved out the way, you've missed the opportunity to see where it's going to go, and it might have ended up being a much bigger thing. I've got lots of, in my notebooks, lots of sort of swearing of, what the hell is this? You know, who is this character? They don't seem to serve a purpose, but I can't get rid of them. I think, you know, if it's too early, if someone says, no, that's not doing any, you know, that's not serving you, get rid of it. I think you can then miss the opportunity. You sort of need to look back and decide that rather than do it in process, which, yeah.
Yeah, I think that makes a lot of sense, for sure. Let's get on to mentioned at the start, you do have sort of other writing exploits. You write for the National Charity Art Fund and its magazine.
I've gone full time on the novel now, but before the deal, I was writing for Art Fund, which was really lovely. Went to work for them for a while.
How do you get into that?
That actually was very luckily through a friend. They just needed someone to come in and basically temp very last minute, some sort of very kind of, you know, basic on the website work. So that's how I sort of got my foot in the door. And then I just hung around. And eventually they gave me more to do. And then eventually they sort of, yeah, there was a job going, which I applied for.
But that's great. I mean, that's those kinds of jobs, whilst not as glamorous, obviously, as being like a published full-time author, it's a great thing to have, like, while you're in the process, while you're on the way to, you know, before you signed your deal and all of that.
Yeah, it is. I think my life up until now has been basically searching for the perfect day job. And actually, while working for ArtFund, it was great. It was lovely. It's a really lovely, brilliant organization. I did find that because it was writing, but not the novel writing, it kind of exhausted my brain and I was writing less of what I wanted to write, which is part of the reason why I went back to freelancing for them and sort of left the main job. It's a difficult one because I did think, oh, you know, I'm not getting anywhere. I'm doing jobs, which, you know, they're all fine in themselves, but it's not writing. And I feel like a writer. So I want to go and get one. But then when I did, it was like, oh, I'm not writing what I want to write. I'm too tired at the end of the day to think about constructing another sentence.
It's funny. I watched, I often talk about Brandon Sanson because he has a series of lectures on YouTube that I watched all of. And he talks about on the road to becoming an author, a lot of people are going to be working a full-time or part-time job beforehand. And the one of the jobs he recommended was, he was like, don't take a job that you think would make sense, but like that involves lots of writing or things like that. He's like, something like bricklaying, something that's very menial and sort of almost therapeutic, and you're just doing the same thing over and over again. He said, those are kind of so good for just giving your brain space to switch off and think about your creative side whilst doing a job which is ostensibly pretty easy.
Yeah, I think that's absolutely right. It was during the first lockdown, the second one, whenever it was, when you were allowed to travel to study. So I went and did a little traineeship on nature conservation on a farm in Devon, which it was like a sort of boot camp of conservation skills. And I actually went there thinking, oh, maybe if I sort of try all these different things out, because that's another area that I'm really interested in. And then maybe I could spend my days, you know, dry stone walling or hedge laying or something, and then go home and write. And it was fantastic. But what actually happened was they asked me to write a blog, and I figured all I wanted to do was write about nature and regenerative farming. I just wanted to write again. I think the jobs I've had, which where you don't have to think too much, have definitely actually been the best ones for the writing.
So before we get on to the final question, we are days away from the book coming out, releasing into the world. How are you feeling about it?
I am just in a constant state of amazement now, I think. It was kind of numb shock, and I'm astonished and excited as well, and a bit nervous.
So is there a part of you that still doesn't think it's going to happen? Like, it still doesn't think it's real?
Definitely. I thought by now I'd have kind of got used to it, but no, I'm still slightly sort of jaw on the floor about the whole thing.
It is surreal. And especially if, you know, if you're someone that has always been around books and you like to go into bookshops and stuff, the idea of seeing your book on a shelf, like in the window or something like that, is just, it's just mind-blowing.
Yeah, I think actually seeing it in a bookshop is going to be another sort of thudding moment. I've got a copy which is just sort of sits around the house, and I do, every time I walk past it, I have a sort of little jolt because it's real. It's something I've dreamt of.
Yeah, I think it's pretty common for, I think I've spoken to a few authors who have, they said that, yeah, the moment when they saw their book in the shop, they cried. Because it's just, it's insane. It's like, it doesn't seem real. In fact, one of my friends recently had like a very weird moment. Melissa, she writes YA, and she saw her book was on a table in a bookshop next to Twilight, which is obviously like a book that she, as a teenager, grew up with.
Yeah.
And it's just, she's like, I never in a million years thought that I would write a book that would be on next to such a like massive kind of global phenomena book that I read when I was a teenager.
Oh, what a brilliant moment. Yeah, I think that is going to be the moment where it does come home. I hope I keep it together.
Yeah, bring a box of tissues, you'll be fine.
I know, it's suddenly this woman crying in Waterstones.
I'm sure they're used to it. They'll be like, ah,
it's probably an art author.
Amazing. Well, I'm very excited for it. Very excited for you.
Thank you.
I hope everything goes amazingly and it's a wonderful time.
Thank you.
That brings us to the final question of the episode, which as always is, Hester, if you were stranded on a desert island with a single book, which book do you hope to have with you?
Well, I had been going to say Possession by A.S. Byatt because she is my sort of mothership for writing. I think I would be very tempted to take Fowler's Dictionary of Modern English Usage, to be honest.
Okay,
I only bought it this year, and I wish I'd bought it much earlier because it's brilliant. It's written in a really conversational style. And it just feels like someone chatting to you knowledgeably about words and grammar. And that's my kind of party. So I think it would be like really good company. And there's so much in it. The snippets that it uses to illustrate a point are all real. They're all taken from the world, and that they're quite often really intriguing sentences. You want to know the background of it, the rest of the story. So I think it would actually be a great sort of source of inspiration because we're going to still be writing on this island, right? It's not just reading.
Well, if you can fashion yourself some kind of writing implement.
Just a stick in the sand, it would just...
Yeah. A helicopter flying over can read your limericks.
Yeah, not help save me, just some really nice sort of metaphor.
They'll start an Instagram page of words written in the sand.
That's mystery. it's just so interesting and there's so much in it and you could be, stuck on an island but improving your vocabulary.
That's why wouldn't you? Brilliant. I wasn't familiar with this book before, but it sounds fantastic. I'm gonna have to look into it.
It's pretty good. Yeah, I recommend it.
Pretty good. The one book I would take with me. Yeah, it's pretty good. Well, that's amazing. Awesome choice. A totally unique choice as well. Never had that before. Nailed it. Thank you so much for coming on the podcast and chatting with me and telling us all about your writing and The Beholders. It sounds amazing. I can't wait for it to come out. It's been awesome chatting.
Thank you very much. It's been really fun. Thanks.
And for anyone listening, if you want to keep up with what Hester is doing, you can follow her on Twitter and Instagram at Hester Musson. And to make sure you don't miss an episode of this podcast, follow along on Twitter, Instagram, TikTok, and Facebook. You can support the show on Patreon. And for more bookish chat, check out my other podcast, The Chosen Ones and Other Tropes. Thanks again to Hester, and thanks to everyone listening. We'll catch you on the next episode.
Save big on your Memorial Day barbecue, all in the Kroger app. Get 3-pound rolls of juicy 80% lean ground beef for $3.49 a pound with a digital coupon. Then get select varieties of flavorful Powerade, Body Armor Super Drink, or Arizona tea for 77 cents each, all with your card. Shop these deals at your local Kroger today, or tap the screen now to download the Kroger app to save big today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Prices and product availability subject to change. Restrictions apply. See site for details.